good morning, good day, no matter where you're at across the world, we are here for you. Welcome to the Leo Roundtable Law Enforcement Talk Show, and my name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. Let me go ahead and introduce our crew to you guys. If you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have Captain Brett Bartlett. We have Corporal David D. Gresta. Thanks, guys, for being on the show. Also, a shout-out to our sponsors. We have Motion DSP, GallsGunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, and we are fueled by Bang Energy. Matter of fact, Brett, I don't know about you, but today I'm drinking the Rainbow Unicorn. Very pretty coloration on my can. I think it looks a little sharper than yours, maybe. But what do you got, Brett?
I have the Wild and Watermelon. It brings me back to my days when my mama would throw us out in the backyard with warm watermelon and make us eat it outside and wouldn't let us come back in. Anyway, that's my message for the day, watermelon.
All right, cool. Thanks, Bang, for the sponsorship. Hey, also shout out Brian Burns, Free Press, for carrying the content. And Ray Dietrich, he's been on our show a couple times now. He's with Red Voice Media. They're letting us borrow three of their Facebook pages with about 1 million followers. So those three Facebook pages are three of the eight locations that we're actually streaming to right now. And YouTube is not one of them. So the latest debacle on the YouTube, yeah, we're in our second week now of suspension. I don't suspect that we'll be back. I'm sure that they are looking to get rid of us because of the conservative nature of this pro-law enforcement talk show. So we'll keep you posted. But look, guys, go to Rumble. If you're looking for a good source other than YouTube to watch a video portion of the show, Rumble is it. Rumble.com. Look for Leo Roundtable. So that said, we got some good stuff lined up. We got one main topic that we're going to be starting off with. And it's not super deep, but it's interesting. On Police One, they say, should you be publishing police policies online? And now I got in a conversation with the DJ that was on before me, Sal T, and got his opinion of it. So, and it differed from what they're recommending in the article. So civilians may feel differently than what law enforcement feels, but law enforcement is doing this for civilians. So it's kind of weird. So the idea of sharing policy for the world to see might be unnerving. However, according to the article, doing so creates transparency. It educates the public and it illustrates your agency's commitment to professionalism. Now, we are talking about agency policies, SOPs, which are standards of operation, manual regulations, that kind of stuff. We're not talking about the release of use of force videos. That's something completely different. But first, as an example, they say, look, let's say the officer works for an agency that requires a public records request to view policy content. It's highly unlikely that the arrestee will choose to navigate this bureaucratic maze to view the policy that's in question. Instead, they'll go on believing that policy was violated during their arrest. Or maybe in spite of the red tape, the arrestee submits to a records request. It ultimately reveals that the policy was adhered to. In other words, the agency did everything right, but it still costs the agency valuable time. And then lastly, you've got, what if the officer works for an agency that publishes policy and content online? The arrestee can go to the agency website and check. The facts show the arrest was conducted within the agency protocol. And these three scenarios have three different outcomes. And one of the outcomes creates division and mistrust, according to the article. The other costs the agency valuable administrative time. But the third one, where they're completely, everything's online, it saves time and it builds trust within the community. At least that's what the author of the article says. Captain Bartlett, what do you think about this?
I'm perfectly okay with it. Convert it to a PDF, stick it on the website, make it search. Who cares? Why would you hide a policy? Because if you hide a policy, it does seem like you're hiding. And why not free up the time from the public records person in the police department and just say, here you go, here's the PDF, all 700 pages of it. Good luck with that. Just let them deal with it. I don't have a problem with that.
So just for clarification, anything that you would withhold, you're going to put like your chase pursuit policies on there, use of force continuum up there, and undercover policies, all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Put it all on there.
All right, good.
Yeah. And to clarify, policies are different than actual operation. The way you run an operation, you're not giving away trade secrets in these types of SOPs and manual regulations, general orders, things of that nature. You're not. So that's not the issue. And our boy, this is Butter, said it best. Doesn't matter. If they're going to sue. So somebody that starts down that road, gets an attorney, they don't care what the policy is. They don't care if you followed it. They're looking to get a check, get a little payday, and that's all that really matters to them. Whether or not you follow the policy is a side note. But no, there should be no reason not to post these things. I mean, you think about it though, for some agencies, smaller agencies in particular, this might turn into almost a either a one-time or an ongoing kind of a financial burden. If you've got to have somebody that can maintain a website, maintain updates, do all that sort of work, that's a body that they either want on the street or they have to hire a civilian to do it to maintain those types of websites or sources that the public can log into and do searches on. So other than that, every major agency, any large agency above a certain size is going to have the budget for it. So it's kind of a no-brainer. Like Brett said, why wouldn't you? Everything is computerized these days. We can go on, or cops now can go on their computer in their car and look up everything they need to find in a policy to make sure they're following it correctly. Yeah. Okay, I've got this kind of a call. I need to write this report. What do they want in the report? It's all there on the computer. You go in there and find, got it. Check. Okay, good. We're good. I don't see a problem with that being available to the public if they really want to look at that sort of stuff. It's kind of a snoozer to read, but beyond that, okay.
All right. Interesting. And I know Captain use of force. So there's a video, body cam, dash cam, whatever it is. The public's, they're normal. Look, there's different policies depending on the state, the agency, for releasing of those things, but they're normally going to be able to get a hold of that sometime sooner than later, but they're going to get all of that. So I get what you're saying. And for the civilians that are getting this, it would help the civilians once you get that video to see whether for yourselves, whether or not the police followed protocol, policy or not, instead of having to go through the PIO and have this whole discourse and just the time it takes and the resources, like you said.
Yeah. Just throw it out there. It's a document. Just let them have it. It costs nothing. When it gets changed, put up the change. And then in one of the procedures, you can even put, hey, we're not going to release video until the investigation is complete. Maybe that'll stop some of the other crap.
Yeah, like the writing. Okay. Yeah.
Well, like Dave said, people are going to do what they're going to do, right? So why add fuel to that ridiculous fire by withholding something that they're going to get anyway? Here you go. Matter of fact, here's a printed copy. Here's your 1,000 pages. Wham! Here you go. Good luck.
Yeah, and I see that we've got This Is Butter, on one of our streams conversing with us. And I know we've got a lot of podcast and radio listeners. We're not trying to take business away from radio stations and podcasting platforms. But if anyone, look, it's hard to cover a news story of the day without a video component. So mm-hmm. If there's a video component that someone wants to eventually see when you get home or whatever, I'll tell you, rumble.com, and the channel is called This Is Butter, best law enforcement video source out there. They get the videos before anybody else does, and that's where we get our videos from. So just a great resource for you guys to check out. So that said, guys, let's see our next story that we've got, waiting on the wire here. LeoFerris.com, my whole website, NYPD officer files a lawsuit over courtesy cards, says that he's being punished for not honoring them. Now, this is this could be controversial. I decided to go ahead and cover it. I kind of, wonder whether I should or not. But you know what? Like Brett said, let's just get it out there. Full disclosure. So Staten Island cop's explosive lawsuit pulls back the curtain on an open secret in NYPD called courtesy cards. Police give them to family and friends so they can get out of a jam when they end up on the wrong side of the law. Now, look, this article is kind of implying when it says the wrong side of the law, like maybe it may be criminal. And look, I we've all heard, well, those in my profession, we've heard of these courtesy cards, and a traffic violation is one thing, a criminal law violation, something else. But reading further, Officer Matthew Bianchi said that he was threatened by union officials, precinct supervisors, and even Chief of Department Jeffrey Madry, and then transferred to nighttime patrol, all because he gave tickets to reckless drivers who tried to dodge punishment by flashing their courtesy cards. Now, at least in Florida, reckless can have a criminal component to it. But Bianchi said that because he was expected to write 5 summonses or tickets, a day while in traffic patrol, people without the courtesy cards were more likely to get ticketed. And he said, there are quotas, so if I let someone go, then I've got to write someone else. So the next guy who doesn't have a card is getting a ticket. It's just not fair. It's something that I feel very strongly about. So the NYPD, according to the article, has long denied the existence of any enforcement quotas. And it goes on to say the courtesy cards are laminated, distributed yearly by 5 police unions. So not by the agency, but by the unions. They don't come with any instructions or guidelines. Officers of all ranks typically give them to family members and friends, with the understanding that if they get pulled over while driving, the card will save them from a ticket. I would like to say it might save them. Not honoring the cards is considered a no-no in NYPD culture, according to the article. And Bianchi, whose lawyer filed the suit on Saturday in Manhattan federal court, says the practice is so ingrained in officers that they're told about the cards and what to do if shown one when they first hit the street. So that's where we're at. Now, Brett, I know you're a former internal affairs commander. Why don't you hop on this one first?
Well, let me go back to my days on the street, you and Dave as well. You know, we gave breaks to complete strangers, right? All the time. So why not give a break to a cop? So what? But then years ago, it started to change, and maybe rightly so. I don't know. And here was the new rule. When that ticket leaves my hand and goes into that basket, I'm not touching it again. You know, so, you know, back when I first came on, they would call, hey, you gave my wife a ticket. You'd go hunt that ticket down, tear it up, and, you know, not even thinking about the consequences. But you know what? I don't know. I think if back in the day, Chip, if you gave my wife a ticket, I'd call you and go, hey, man, you're a jerk, right? But I wouldn't cry to the union, and I wouldn't cry to the command staff, because that just indicates that there is a systemic culture of it, and it may be a huge problem for them.
Good point. Well, I'm sure Dave is probably going to weigh on this, I would think. So, look, guys, stick with us. It's about to get really, really good. Commercial break. We will be right back. You know, Motion DSP, they've been supporting the law enforcement profession for over 15 years for the robust suite of video and audio redaction and enhancement software. The Motion DSP software is easy to use, requires no specialized training or expertise, and you can save valuable time with Spotlight's one-click automating tracking feature and forensic suite of enhancement filters, achieving results quickly in just three steps: import, process, and export. Now, Spotlight is built specifically for redaction. It works with video from any camera source, and using Motion DSP's algorithms and object tracking technology, it automates the process of blurring faces and other identifiable information. It saves users countless hours compared to manual frame-by-frame redaction. And forensic enhancement software that allows users to quickly process and analyze any video file format using patented super resolution algorithms and enhancement filters to reveal an unseen level of detail. And you can actually get forensically valid evidence from low quality video in just minutes instead of hours. So you can learn more about all these products by simply going to motiondsp.com. If you haven't been before, do it today, motiondsp.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the Leo Roundtable Law Enforcement Talk Show. We are live from the Boss Hog Radio Studios in Plant City, Florida. And we just left off talking about NYPD courtesy cards. Yeah, the kind that kind of get you out of a jam if you're a friend or family of law enforcement. Corporal David.
Oops. You know, this guy is the modern Serpico of the traffic unit kind of a thing. And in the article, it talks about a scandal back in 2011 where, you know, they were a bunch of people that got in trouble at various levels for fixing tickets, getting rid of tickets. You know, there was apparently a big investigation. NYPD is such a huge place. Everything is relative. The larger the agency, the more corruption you're going to find within it. That's just the odds, so to speak. But law enforcement has always had discretion. Always. They always have, and they always will. And it should be that way, because you're out there on the street and you're making decisions minute by minute about how you're going to affect someone's life going forward. So you've got to have that discretion. But being pushed one way or the other is where the thing goes sideways. And to say that that cops all over are not pressured to write citations is just a bald-faced lie. And so when you look at stuff, and when I was working for Tampa, we're in a unit and did a little research, and the agency wanted, they had a traffic squad. I think there was 8 guys on the squad, a corporal and a sergeant, total of 10. And they did doing some little research. Everybody needs to pull their weight. Are we being productive? And they pulled up the stats about how many tickets were being written, so on and so forth, and came to realize that unit was writing just under $200,000 per month in collectible fines. Now, they claim that the reason that they have a traffic squad and that people write tickets is to reduce traffic crashes and make the roads safer. So what did they do? They doubled the size of the traffic squad, of course. Give me a break. And then there was a stink about where those collectible fines were going. And they got into a peeing duel with the courts about who was collecting the money and where it was going, because a lot of that money written by the city would go back into the city coffers, into the general fund, and everybody wanted their cut. So, you know, when you start getting into traffic tickets, there's stories and there's information out there that is just, it's disturbing. Yeah, don't tell me you want me to write tickets for this reason. Now, if you're on a traffic squad and that's your job, then go out there and do your job. If you don't want to do that, then do something else within the agency. Chase dopers, whatever, I don't care. That's fine. But if you're on a traffic squad, that's your job. Go out and write tickets. You should have some sort of production line. If you don't want to use the word quota, that's fine. I don't care. But if that's all you do all day is write citations, summonses, whatever it is, traffic enforcement, then there has to be some sort of a level that you attain during your shifts, during your month, whatever it is. So, because the same thing is held for guys working on the street. How many arrests did you make? How many reports did you write? How many, all the different categories that they measure to see if you were being a productive officer on the street. They didn't take your discretion away, but you still had to produce. So that's just the way that works.
Thanks. Now, Captain, when I hear the word like a regular moving violation or reckless, I consider those being vast rules apart. If I pull someone over and it's a family member or whatever, and it's a moving violation, I might consider giving but if it's a reckless driving thing, reckless driving to me is substantial. Then we're talking about a whole different situation. I don't know how you feel, but.
You know, many years have passed, and here's what we should say to the people in New York City. How about this? Do us a favor, pay us respect by not driving like a jerk. How about that? So we don't have to put ourselves in this situation. But remember the old rule, Dave, hey, I don't care. If they're a jerk, they're getting a ticket. Because what's a ticket supposed to do? It's supposed to change their behavior. So if they haven't recognized their sins, so to speak, that's when you lay that ticket. Now, they were a lot more, not fun, they were a lot more palatable when they were $25 across the board. You know, you didn't feel so bad about writing a guy, but now they're $200 or $300. Remember, Chip, Dave, years ago at Tampa Police, they came out with this number system and they counted up how many arrests and tickets you wrote a month. It was a disaster. It was an absolute disaster. They were measuring things that just didn't matter. So the poor guy that was out there wrote a couple of daytime burglaries and a couple of child abuses. He's all day making one arrest. He loses to the guy that was sitting over there in East Tampa by the African-American churches.
Bird dogging.
Bird dogging some stop signs. So the old ladies wearing big hats ran. He'd get his tickets in the morning. I'm telling you, I saw cops sitting in the back row of roll call when this new thing came out, figure out exactly how many arrests and how many tickets they needed to get in the top tier and be rewarded, having produced nothing of substance to the criminal justice system or reducing victims in the city of Tampa. And we went to one of the chiefs, me and some other lieutenants, said, "Chief, this ain't right, man. This is just," and I was told, "Hey, production's up, crime is down. I don't want to hear anything else."
You know, if there's an easy way to get it done, you know, most of your cops are going to figure out the way to get it done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you come up roll call. Hey, we're trying to figure out the origin of the universe. And that 30-year-old guy in the back, he gets out his notebook and in 2 minutes. Yeah, I got that. I got that. They're just good at it, right? They're good at going, you know, we are good at going around policies. We are good at figuring out numbers. Now, on the other side of that, there was an officer who wasn't writing any tickets, right? And so he was written up and his complaint was,
David raises his hand.
Well, is there a quota? But you know what, buddy, if you're a cop and in your job description, you're having a difficult time telling me that you can't go a whole month without writing somebody a ticket. And he said, "I just don't like writing tickets. I don't think they're fair." Well, they're paying the buck. Remember, they were $200 or $300. But you know, but you got to do your job. If not, there's other jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It was funny. And during that time that Brett was talking about, I can't remember what they called it. But it was ridiculous. The fights, not the fights, but the spirited discussions between the guys on the street and the mid managers that were caught in the middle there trying to enforce some of this stuff, was some of it was just hysterical.
Yeah, it was called the ratio. I don't remember exactly how it was.
So, it was stupid.
Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right. Hey, it's time to talk about Gauls at Gauls.com/Leo. Hopefully, Captain Brett Bartley can help me out with this one. And you guys know of Gauls, right? I mean, the country's leading uniform, clothing, equipment, and gear provider for law enforcement. They have a variety of offerings, everything from multi-tools and flashlights to duty belts and tactical gear. And as Captain Brett Bartlett always says, they pretty much have everything for law enforcement except for firearms and ammunition. So, Captain, you know what's going on at Gauls this week?
I do. They got a, if you give them your email and subscribe to their email, you get a 15% immediate discount on your entire order, 20% off Vertex. They make bags and shoes, 20% off original SWAT, a whole line of boots, 20% off Altama. They make a lot of maritime shoes, kind of a neat thing. They also have a sale on Garmin GPS watches.
Wow. So that much stuff going on. And this is not even the Memorial Day sale anymore. Wow, that's incredible. So
that sale's over. They still got some good stuff going on.
Gauls.com/Leo, guys.
Let's talk about Medicare insurance options. There's over 80 options in just Hillsborough County alone. Now, the benefits can change annually. So how do you know that you're getting the benefits for your specific healthcare needs? The answer is simple. Contact MyMedicare.live or call area code 813-245-6656. Especially if you're in the Tampa Bay area, talk to James or Bobby, meet with them in person. They'll save you money on your medication copays, find plans that your doctors accept, and get more of the benefits that you qualify for. So again, mymedicare.live.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Leo Roundtable Law Enforcement Talk Show. And yes, we're still live to the Boss Talk Radio Studios in Plant City, Florida. You know, on break, I see that we've got This Is Butter type. There's a hot off the press, a new video that's at rumble.com/thisisbutter, that channel. And we have a New York State trooper that's been charged with an officer related shoot with a officer involved shooting. I'm sure we'll be covering that probably in tomorrow's show, but thank you, This Is Butter, for posting that. Guys, any more commentary, or are you ready to move on? We got it. So let's move on to our first story that's got a video component. And look for our radio and podcast listeners. We'll describe in great detail what's going on so you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. And so, yes, we're at rumble.com. And guess where? We're at This Is Butter, the best channel out there. Man who shot a Metro police officer, and we're in Nashville, by the way, but so a Metro Nashville police officer, he dies after an exchange of gunfire with SWAT officers.
Drop that gun! I'm shot.
Man, this is an incredible video on this thing, but we'll describe in great detail what it is. So the man accused of shooting a Metro Nashville police officer on Thursday afternoon has died, according to the Metro Police. So police said the llama Casimir, 37 years old, of Pompano Beach, Florida. He died after he engaged a Metro Police SWAT officer from behind a bush pile at a home. So Casimir was shot in exchange of gunfire. So Casimir, or bad guy, he's accused of shooting Metro Police Detective Donovan Cobble, 33 years old, a four-year veteran of the police force, earlier in the afternoon. Now, the detective remains in critical but stable condition. He's recovering from a gunshot wound to his side and rib area. The detective is expected to recover and is assigned to the Hermitage Precinct's Community Field Intelligence Unit. So the detective and other detectives, they responded to a call. It's 2:30 in the afternoon at what they call the parking spot. It's an airport parking area for travelers. And the call was concerning an armed man. And they said that he was breaking in the car. So the detective called his body-worn camera. It shows detectives encountering Casimir, a bad guy, in the rear parking lot. Police said that he was ordered to stop, but instead he runs through the parking lot. He jumps over a fence. So the detective actually jumps the fence, and it's a high fence. He jumps the fence, and he's got a taser in his hand, and he again orders our bad guy to stop. So during the pursuit, the detective transitions to his pistol just before the video shows our bad guy pointing a .380 semi-automatic pistol over his shoulder in the detective's direction. Now, the detective ends up getting struck in the side during the exchange of gunfire. It's not clear whether it's this wild, crazy shot that would have, you know, hit the cop or not, but it was a just a wild angle. But anyhow, the video shows our bad guy going down in heavy brush. The detective radios that he's been shot, and he hurries back to the street where another detective picks him up, rushes him to the hospital. So the precinct and squad officers, they respond to the area. They're searching for our unidentified gunman, right? And so at 3:35 p.m., SWAT officer Tim Brewer, he's clearing a section of heavy foliage. I mean, it is thick. And he finds the bad guy in the brush. He begins shouting commands to the bad guy, but he sees the bad guy has a pistol, and our SWAT cop has got like an AR, right? So he loads this guy up, and he later dies. So the detective that ended up getting shot originally, he's named Officer of the Year earlier this week, and Officer Brewer, the SWAT guy, he's a 16-year Metro Police veteran. So that's the way that goes down. It's pretty intense commentary, guys.
I believe I saw him shooting over his shoulder.
Oh, yeah. The bad guy.
I mean, yeah. He just reached over. I think he had it in his left hand and just reached over. Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, the next time we meet, guys, let's have a over-the-shoulder match and see who can hit the X-ring. That just proves bad guys from birth are better shooters than some of us are.
I mean, Curtis and Coke have all over again, right?
And while running too, Brett. Well, he wasn't standing, he was running. The question was, I mean, honestly, whether or not that was the shot that hit the officer, or if it was a different shot, it was, you know, what exactly happened in the exchange. It was kind of hard to see in the video. You know, it's a tough situation. Obviously, the cops saw something happening in front of him when he transitioned from taser to firearm. And again, this is one of those scenarios where it's did he get on the trigger fast enough? And also, did he hit the bad guy as well? Because there was quite an exchange between him and the bad guy right there in those bushes. The cop obviously gets hit. He retreats. He perhaps didn't know how bad or how bad the shot that he had taken was, or not. So he retreats. They set up a perimeter. The other guys with the long guns move in, and you see the if it was a SWAT officer that was standing there at the edge of these bushes. And he's talking in a normal voice to his other guys. Okay, we're going to go here. Let's move this way. Let's sweep this, so on and so forth. And he literally takes one step forward into the bushes. And then there the guy is. Oh, crap! And he's on him. So, again, one of those things, be ready. I don't think he was not expecting to see him that close. He thought he'd run off into the trees somewhere, was hiding back in the bushes. He was right there on the edge. And the guy flinched the wrong way, and he took care of business. So all of that ended well, and everybody ended up where they needed to. So there.
Yeah. Hard for me not to believe the bad guy had got hit in the initial exchange, just because it looked like he was in the same location, and quite a bit of time transpired between that time and when SWAT finally found him. And you know, I think he would have just bugged away, or at least made the effort to, if he wasn't shot. So I don't know though.
Yeah. I think he took a lick from the original officer. And I saw him fall down. I don't think he tripped, but really, who knows? And this gives lie to the left's idea that hey, a bad guy running away from you is no threat.
Yeah.
Hey, ask this cop that was in, you know, a bad condition, he got shot in the abdomen. Ask him how that's working out.
And how do you, assuming that, because we know it had potential for him to get hit with that round, how do you protect yourself against that bad guy running away and he just raises a gun while he's not even looking at you and just fires over the back of his, you know, head. Just crazy.
You know, if chance is with the bad guy and that he shot over his shoulder, he still hit, it's not much of a stretch to say it could be chance. The officer took one right in the face.
Yeah.
Right in the heart. You know, we just don't know. So there's that little bit of hope there that there's somebody watching down and saying, hey, I'm going to not let this officer die.
Yeah. There is a God, guys. Yeah. We got proof now. Hey, let's go on to our next story, and there's also going to be a video component in this one as well. So we are still at rumble.com. This is Butters, the channel. Sacramento police, they released body cam footage of canine handlers. So we have a couple canine handlers shooting a woman armed with an airsoft gun.
Thank you. Drove it now!
Of course, they didn't know at the time that it was not a real gun, but new body cam footage was released Thursday of Sacramento police officers shooting this woman carrying an airsoft gun. The shooting happened May the 20th. The woman shot was identified as 43-year-old Chio Steedham. She was arrested on suspicion of robbery after being released from a hospital, actually. So interesting story there, I'm sure. It goes on to say that officers responded to a business just after noon on Saturday, May the 20th, for a report of a person with a gun. 20 minutes later, officers, they're checking the scene. They get reports of a person waving a gun around. And then a third call comes in about someone pointing a gun at customers in a business that's in the same area. So an officer sees a person, matches the description given by callers. Police say they tried to get her attention, but that she starts running from them and she's ignoring multiple commands to stop. But she ends up finally stopping. She turns towards the officers, points the gun at two canine handlers, and they end up firing their handgun. So yeah, this is probably a good scenario, David, is the fact that the canines were not deployed on somebody with a handgun, you know, because we know some jurisdictions obviously do that. And the canine's life is up for grabs, but this woman's taken to the hospital. She has non-life-threatening injuries. Officers later found out that she's carrying an airsoft gun. So that's the way that goes down. David.
Tough luck. This is one of those videos you kind of, when you look at it, some good stuff and then some other stuff, you kind of go, come on, guys. Initially, the first cop that comes up on her, whatever it was, woman, really? it takes off down the street, and instead of backing up and doing all this, he just drives right through the park, over the sidewalks, through the trees. I was going, dude, way to go. So he stays on her. But then it turns into one of those scenarios where you've got to start asking yourself, or prompting these officers to do something. Following this thing down the road that you've already been told by a bunch of people that she has a gun, she's been waving it around, she's acting this way, now she's running from you. It's time to do something. The following them you down the street and yelling at you over and over and over again, stop, get on the ground, get on the ground, get on the ground, get on the ground. You have to do something. Hit her with the car. Do something. Because once again, what we saw was she ran down the road far enough until she had the advantage behind a tree and behind a car where there were civilians in the car before she turned with the gun and pointed it at the officers, causing then the shootout at that point. With civilians in a car, she has cover behind a tree, you're out in space. One cop had none of the cops had cover, because the one cop pulled up. He got out of his driver's side door. He was right there in front of her with the car between him and her. So it's time to act. Following down the road, yelling and screaming over and over again, as Brett says, that's suddenly going to make her stop. No.
All right. Thanks, David. Guys, time for commercial break, but hang in there. We'll be right back. You know, no matter how much you know about guns and ammunition, there's that knowledge gap that leaves you confused and missing the complete picture. GunLearn.com, they've taken the confusion out of learning and they've made it easy. GunLearn.com is the first and it's the only company to offer a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, they provide citations from federal law and ATF rulings for every point taught to ensure accuracy. And their training is approved by major forensic organizations, by law enforcement agencies, and also firearm manufacturers. Since 1996, they've taught everything that LEOs, that's law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now, you can start today with online training, or you can register to attend a live seminar. And you can also get free training for the personnel at your agency and also yourself by hosting a seminar at absolutely no cost. So come aboard as one of the most firearm knowledgeable people in the world, like our Captain Brett Bartlett here, by joining the folks at GunLearn.com. You'll be glad that you did. All right, guys, welcome back to the Leo Roundtable Law Enforcement Talk Show. We're live from the Boss Hog Radio Studios in Plant City, Florida. We're talking about a use of force, and Captain Brett Bartlett, the floor is yours.
You know, David mentioned this. You know, police have to quit yelling. It's just not working. It's just not. All that time you're yelling at a bad guy who's not paying attention could be used, that effort could be used coordinating with the other cops next to you, right? Stop, police, don't move. Well, that didn't work. Hey, Bill, you go to the left, you go to the right. Dave, you go to the front. Hey, stop, police, don't move. Well, that ain't working. All right, guys, let's move in. Let's get a little bit closer. Radio, here's what we got going on. Quit yelling these wasteful things. They're not listening to you. Use that energy in a more directed approach to plan the next step rather than giving orders to somebody who will not listen to you. Now, when it comes to the airsoft, I think even if I knew it was an airsoft and they point at me, I'd shoot them.
Yeah.
Especially here in Florida. 776012 subparagraph 2 says that, you know, if I have a reasonable belief I'm in imminent fear of death or great bodily harm, and if that pellet goes into my eye, I'm losing that eye, I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger.
That's an excellent point, Brett. So many people get caught up in just the death-only aspect of that, but you don't have to be in fear of death in order to use deadly force. That's a great point. So thanks for reminding everybody. Guys, moving along here, let's go to our next one here. We're doing great on time. We got 8 minutes left, and thanks for guys for sticking with us, especially our streamers here. But police1.com, we have a California bill calling to limit the use of canines in arrest and crowd control, and it's not moving forward. So, wow. One for the good guys in the state of California. It's unusual. That's why I wanted to cover it. We've been talking about this for a while. So, yeah, we're in Sacramento. So this bill would have severely restricted law enforcement officers' use of canines, banning the use of the animals to help make arrests and control crowds unless there's an imminent threat of danger or death, and it will not be moving forward this year. Doesn't mean it's done for good, but just this year. Their proposed legislation is called Assembly Bill 742. It called for elevating the standard for when a police canine could be released to bite somebody, making it the same standard that's required under the law for when an officer can use deadly force. I know it sounds crazy, right? So had it become law, it would have affected officers' ability to deploy dogs for search and rescue and to detect drugs and bombs. And advocates of the bill, advocates, people in favor of it, they say authorities have historically used dogs against black and brown people, and AB 742 would end that traumatic experience. Wow. Police say the dogs de-escalate situations, and restricting use of a specially trained animal could lead to more shootings by police officers. So the bill was moved to the Assembly's inactive file on Wednesday. It will not be moving forward this year, according to the Assembly member that started this, and that's Corey Jackson. And Corey Jackson proposed that the bill, but the Jackson also still needed the votes, and law enforcement's been working hard to fight it. Thank God. His office said he hopes to work with policing agencies to bring it back next year. But guess what? It's not going to happen, Corey. Commentary on that, guys. Brett?
You know, I'd venture to say, at least in the last 3 years, dogs in crowd control have been used more against white people than black people. And we're going to call them white Antifa douchebag, left-leaning, living at home in mama's basement, eating Cheetos and playing Xbox scumbags.
Yeah.
Now, I do agree that using dogs at back in the 60s in Selma, the place, man, it was bad. They were sicking dogs on people who were just peacefully. So I understand how that looks. And I would say, look, okay, we won't use them in crowd control, period. But we're still going to use them to catch bad guys. We're still going to use them if it's a deadly force. We're still going to use them. But I understand it doesn't look good depending on the situation. But it doesn't matter. The people that want to push this bill forward, they want to defund and get rid of the police. It doesn't really matter. This is just another avenue to take a bite out of their crime.
I'm glad you went there. If you hadn't, I would have. This is just... To cause an agency or to cause the standards for a canine to be used in an apprehension up to the level of deadly force basically does away with the canine unit in that capacity, because it is incorrect, it is inappropriate, it is absolutely 100% wrong. And I don't care what canine guy, you can email me or text me from wherever you are, and I will tell you you're wrong to send a canine in a deadly force scenario. That is stupid. Don't do it. So that being said, it pretty much that ends any sort of canine apprehension work. Now I'll take a little umbrage with the whole, oh, canine will be over. No, bloodhounds to track missing children, to track missing people, drug detection dogs at the airport, Labradors and things of that nature that people all come up and hug and kiss and whatnot. It's, you know, they're targeting the shepherds, the Belgian Malinois, those sort of bite work dogs, apprehension dogs that they want to, as Brett said, get rid of, take a bite out of the ability of police officers to do that type of work. It's they are very useful. A lot of them do track as well. And it's a lot more intimidating to have a Belgian Malinois tracking you than a bloodhound. It just is. So that's the whole thing. And I've seen both work, and they're great tools. So it's just another, as Brett said, just another way of that segment of society trying to carve away police ability, police resources, defunding them any way they can. That's where all this comes from, period. Nothing else. It's all it has to do with.
All right. No shocker, but I'm kind of surprised. I'm happy it didn't go through, but a little bit surprised for California. So thanks, guys. Moving along here then, let's see. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but let's cover the next story that's got a video component in line back at rumble.com. This is Butter again. LAPD, they fatally shoot a suspect who bailed out in a police chase and then pulled out a gun and reaches for it. So this happened on May the 5th and 2:40 in the morning. So it's very early. It's dark outside. Uniformed patrol officers assigned to the Southeast Patrol Division conducting a directed crime suppression in the area thing. And the officers observe a Hispanic female at an ATM at a gas station, along with a Hispanic male. And bad guy's name is Hector Macias. And he's standing behind her. So the officers start to engage them. And I'll breeze through this thing, but the officers engage them in a conversation from their police vehicle. So the officer's still in the car. And based on our bad guy's demeanor, the officers formulated the opinion that he possibly was armed with a handgun. So bad guy and the female abruptly get into a white Mercedes that's parked next to them. It's being driven by another Hispanic male, and they speed away. Officers get pursuit, right? So bad guy gets out of the vehicle. The Mercedes then continues to drive away, but the officers focus on this bad guy, the one they thought might be armed, order him to stop. He runs away, fails to comply. They exit their police cars finally, and they initiate a foot pursuit. So as they're running after a bad guy, he trips, he falls down, and he's in an open lot underneath the freeway. So they catch up to him. There's a struggle with the bad guy. He attempts to remove an unknown object from a satchel that he's got slung over his chest. He then produces a firearm from the satchel. An officer involved shooting happens. He's struck by gunfire, transported hospital, ends up dying, and they found a semi-automatic gun that was loaded and ready to go. So that's the way that goes down. Commentary, guys, we got a minute and 20 seconds. David.
The beginning of the video is very important. The officers pull up. They see the guy. They engage him. There was a lot more going on there. He pulled his satchel around. It was showing things and doing things with it. You see the flashlight come on inside the car. They saw something that caused them to go, oh, that guy's got a gun. So this whole, their perception or whatever it was a lot more than that. Let's get that straight first. Chase happens. Then the inevitable. Everybody bails out. The girl gets out. The guy gets out and runs. And the guy drives off in the Mercedes. They got tunnel vision. They should have told the chopper, stay with the car, because that's wherever these people were doing, it's in the car. Everybody bailing out of a car and running like this is just a distraction. They threw the guy with the gun out, run. They made the girl get out, walk. And so now you're distracted. You're going after them, and the car drives off, and you never see it again. All the evidence is gone. A little bit of focus, guys. You did good. Got the guy with the gun. I don't know if they ever caught the female either, but tunnel vision, kids, tunnel vision. Keep
15 seconds, Brett.
Evidently.
Kudos for getting over that fence. I'm not sure I could have done it. But when that guy started reaching for that gun the first time on the ground, they should have shot him then. I believe the guy wanted to die because he covered himself up. He knew it was coming.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Appreciate you being here. Also to our streamers and everybody listening on radio and podcast, thank you guys so much. And for anybody who wants to catch the repeat of the show with the produced version with videos embedded and all that stuff, at rumble.com tomorrow, 9 o'clock in the morning, it'll appear. So look, I'll always take this time to give a shout out to Lieutenant Randy Sutton's charity from Las Vegas Metro Police Department. He's got the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. It's a fantastic 501c3. They're helping cops out that are in a world of hurt, PTSD, maybe having medical issues that the department's not covering them or not offering them a disability retirement out. So again, the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Also, thanks again to Motion DSP, GallusGunLearner.com on Medicare.live, and Bang Energy for the fuel. And hey, Brian Burns with Free Press for carrying our content. And huge shout out, Ray Dietrich, Red Voice Media at redvoicemedia.com. Check them out. Great news source. Hope everybody has a wonderful and a safe week, guys. Thanks a lot.